I think empathy belongs in the humanity family, but I think humanity is bigger than empathy. In short, humanity is all things dealing with human nature, human culture, human interactions, how we get on one with another, but really at the center of it is how we get along with ourselves. That internal way of being that is sometimes innate or inherent to some of us, but sometimes has to be cultivated and practiced a little bit more by some of us. But at the foundational root of humanity, I think is love. I think is self-love. And I'm not talking about the romantic love way of being. I'm actually glad that some researchers now study love inside of organizations. So they've sort of demystified this touchy-feely concept and put it into something that is scientific in practice and something that we can observe and measure. I really like that love has taken on that direction as a foundational function of humanity.
Welcome to Manager to Manager, a podcast about the experiences of people leaders and how we can enable them to lead engaged, healthy, and high-performing teams. I'm Kamaria Scott, your host, and I'm thrilled to have you join us as we learn, lead, and succeed together. Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of Manager to Manager. I don't know about you, but it seems to me like since the pandemic, we have, as people leaders, been really challenged to lead in a different way and to show up in ways that are increasingly human when it comes to leading our teams. And so I am excited today to welcome a guest who's amazing at thinking about how we embrace our own humanity and how we incorporate that into how we lead our teams. So welcome, Dr. Jason James, to the show. I'm so glad to have you.
Thank you. I am so excited to be here with you. I'm glad we get to join forces again in this capacity. And I would be remiss to say I miss working with you, but I'm glad that we have maintained a wonderful friendship and professional working way down through the years. And I couldn't agree more that the pandemic has certainly put us in a most interesting state of humanity.
Yes. And so I'm excited for us to talk a little bit about that. But before we get started, obviously, I know you very well, but please do share with the listeners a little bit about yourself and what you do.
So I'm an East Coast boy, born and raised. I'm from Milford, which is a very small town in the state of small Delaware. I currently live in Madison, Indiana. I am a permanent resident of Wilmington, Delaware. And the only other place I've ever lived is Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I went to the University of Delaware for my undergraduate work, have a degree in business administration, did a double major because I'm a little nerdy in finance, business management. Although I have a degree in finance, I was a practicing accountant, and I like to say a recovering accountant. I completed my master's work at Newman University. I have a master's science in strategic leadership and organizational development. And probably my best learning experience was working on my doctoral degree. So I did a doctor of education at Wilmington University, and my concentrations were learning, leadership, and innovation. I probably learned the most about myself and other people by going through that doctoral journey. I really have had a varied career between industry and higher education. I spent 17 years in financial services, and the last 10 years, I've been squarely in higher education in multiple capacities.
One thing that I've always found interesting about you is that you have a very solid history in both the corporate world and academia, and you also have formally studied leadership. So I always think that's really cool. Most of us, as we start as people leaders, we're just winging it. We're just like, I think I'm doing the right thing. Let me go at it. But you actually come to it from not only, and I'm sure the listeners can pick up on this, not only just a, hey, how am I leading them? And I'm figuring out an experience, but you also come to it from an academic, I've learned and studied leadership. And so I'm wondering, as we get started in this conversation, how you think those things influenced each other and you as a leader.
You picked up on a point that is extremely important. And let me tell you, having that experience, I have to be very careful with myself to be critical without being cynical. And that's of myself and of other people who do this thing known as leadership. There's something interesting that happens when you know theoretically what you should do, but then the practical nature of doing that thing, it sometimes misaligns. You can misfire. I guess if you don't know the theoretical underpinnings of leadership, you could misfire without knowing you did. But if you know what you know, and then you practice what you practice, and they're inconsistent, that can be very cringe. I have to give myself grace in some instances. Now, let me tell you, I get it right a lot, but I don't always get it right. And I think that's a point of humility, that whether knowing the theory and concepts behind your practice or not, leaders can give themselves grace all while practicing humanity. I think grace is a part of the humanity family. So thank you for that question. And thank you for putting me on the spot. And now I'm going to think about that long after we finish with this.
I'm sure you are. But I think that also goes to the purpose of what we're talking about today. It's interesting that you said, gosh, sometimes I am hard on myself, or I have to give myself grace. I didn't get it right. I know what I'm supposed to be doing, and I have to figure out how to bring it full circle. It's an interesting place to be. You and I both, again, formal backgrounds in leadership, but then showing up day to day, it's different. And so let's just then jump into the conversation about humanity, because I think forgiving ourselves, giving ourselves grace, seeing the full picture of what we are going through and when we fall short, and also seeing that in our teams is an interesting thing to do day to day, especially in our high pressure world. So whenever I say the word empathy to leaders, I get a glossy eye and they're like, okay, I heard the word, but maybe I don't know what it means. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about humanity, I think that's another word that people are like, but what does it mean? So when you think about humanity, just as a word that comes into us as leaders, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And even back to the point of empathy, I think empathy belongs in the humanity family, but I think humanity is bigger than empathy. In short, humanity is all things dealing with human nature, human culture, human interactions, how we get on one with another. But really, at the center of it is how we get along with ourselves. That internal way of being that is sometimes innate or inherent to some of us, but sometimes has to be cultivated and practiced a little bit more by some of us. But at the foundational root of humanity, I think is love. I think is self-love. And I'm not talking about the romantic love way of being. I'm actually glad that some researchers now study love inside of organizations. So they've sort of demystified this touchy-feely concept and put it into something that is scientific in practice and something that we can observe and measure. I really like that love has taken on that direction as a foundational function of humanity.
That's so interesting, because the last corporate place that I worked, as they were developing out their mission and their positioning in the world, they were like, we want to be loved by our employees and by our customers and our communities. And it was such an interesting choice of words. And I could tell that it made people uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Some people were like, oh, yeah, that's fine. And then some people were like, I don't know, because we don't often pull love into the corporate space. But it's interesting.
And I think maybe for a couple of reasons, I think sometimes, and I can tell you about my own evolution with the term love and the definitional way around it. I think love is bigger than a feeling, although I think there are feelings associated with love. I think love is a combination of a decision and feelings. And I think these business leaders who are going after the concept of love that they think they want from their employees, colleagues, and customers, I think the sentiment is right. Sometimes the operationalizing of that love gets a little lost, not because people don't want to get it right, but I think it's that leaning back on the feeling of love, the maybe butterflies in the stomach or heart beating fast in the chest. That's actually not what I'm talking about when I talk about love in organizations. I'm talking about the thing that we give to ourselves, the way in which we treat ourselves, that comes out into how we treat and interact with our colleagues, with our peers, with our direct reports, and with our customers. And dare I say, the more that we love ourselves, the more authentic and transparent and meaningful love we can give to all of those stakeholders that I just mentioned. And in fact, when we do pass those things on to our colleagues, our employees, those internal folks, our customers, our students, our people who buy our products and services, they will benefit from the decision of love that was made, and more than just the feeling of love that was generated.
I love that. I love that so much. Because as we struggle with the employee value proposition and the psychological contract of work, and what are we supposed to be to one another? We don't like to use the word family anymore, but once upon a time, we were like, we're family. And now we're like, no, we're not, because families don't fire each other and lay each other off.
You know, I make a very big delineation between relatives and family. Often in the workplace, we can say we're relatives, but because we share this common thing, like, okay, blood makes us relatives, relationship makes us family. I can't afford to just go in any organization nowadays and say we're a family. I can say we have a relative way of being because of the space that we occupy and share. But trust me, that determination or that categorization of family goes through a very strict process for me. You and I might be family because we've gone there, we've built that relationship. That's where I sort of draw the line between family and relatives. But also, just in the workplace, the term family has sort of gotten batted around a lot and sometimes very, very misused. So I sort of try to lean on we're relatives in the workplace, just like blood makes us relatives, but relationship makes us family.
I love that. I feel like I collect wonderful sayings when I talk to people. And I think that's one that I'm going to collect and pass on to other people.
Yeah.
So let's talk about your journey to humanity. Because one of the things you said was that it starts with our relationship with ourselves and our self-love. And then when we are able to cultivate that and understand it, then we're able to pass on to other people. So tell me a little bit about your own personal journey to humanity and understanding and embracing it for yourself. And then we'll talk a little bit about kind of how that shows up as people leader.
Yeah, well, with that question, I'm happy that I've been working with the counselor or therapist for some time, because now I'm reflective on how did I get here? Believe it or not, there was a time where I wasn't as in love with myself as I am now. And I don't think that's so dissimilar to people journeying through the decades of their lives. And so I can appreciate where I've come to in this, not just acceptance of myself, because I don't want to say that I've accepted myself and so I'm done growing. I don't want to send that message at all. I've accepted myself for who I am and what I've been through, all while knowing that I still have room to grow. I've had some wonderful life experiences, but probably not so dissimilar to other people. I've also had some very weird, challenging, less than favorable experiences. What I've learned, or the direction I've decided to go with that, is, hey, all of these experiences make me me. Without any of those, I wouldn't currently be me. Do I have to love all of those experiences? No, but I also don't have to begrudge them, because at the end of the day, the beginning of the day, in the middle of the day, all throughout the day, I love myself. And so I sort of go back to my accounting brain when trying to reconcile, say, general ledger entries. Did the credits and the debits match up? Well, if I had these experiences, and there's some that I'm like, oh, if I could just get rid of that one, then life would be okay. But if I got rid of that one, I wouldn't be me. So I'm back to the accounting brain. Like I said, I'm a recovering accountant, but I still think that equation works. And I've applied that to the experiences that I've had through life. What I want for myself, though, is this mantra that I use, known as sleep in peace and wake in joy. I can achieve the realization of that mantra by the way that I treat myself, think about myself, interact with myself throughout the day. At the same time, that same way that I go about interacting with other humans. How do I go about doing that? What I do, what I say, what I think throughout the day, relative to myself, relative to you, and any other person I come in contact with, will dictate if I can sleep in peace and wake in joy. And trust me, I want that on a daily basis. One thing you know about me is I get up early, so I need quality sleep. There are things that I don't want on my mind, on my heart. And so I process myself in that way. And I try to show up to the workplace in a manner in which I think my colleagues, my direct reports, my other stakeholders deserve. And I think about the kind of person that I deserve to lead me and to teach me and to guide me. I want that person to have done the internal work. I want that person to love themselves, respect themselves, because again, that internal way of being can't hide.
I almost feel like I have to jump in for just a second because you've said so many wonderful things. And I remember it reminds me of there was a post I saw on Twitter. I reposted it to LinkedIn where someone said, if you're in a position of leadership, you probably need to get yourself to therapy. I love that so much because for those of us who are people leaders, at some point you come to this realization that you can't give people what you don't have. And I vividly remember working on a project to a point where I hadn't slept, where I hadn't, done relevant self-care. Who knows what might have been going on in my personal life? I was parenting, whatever it is. And I found myself in conversations with people that I led where I wasn't able to give them what they needed. I wasn't able to see past, what was happening for me. And I did say to myself, I have to take a step back because in the dynamic world that we live in, where there are deadlines, there are pressures, if I come to this from a place that is not healthy, it's not well rested. But also, if I don't come to this from a place that is caring for me, it's really hard for me to then care for other people. It's hard for me to give it to them because I'm not even giving it to myself. And I think that's one of the biggest takeaways in these past couple years. I remember there being this article that I read where it was talking about Gen Z, and it was saying that they're looking at their managers who are burnt out, who are not practicing self-care, who are on Slack or Zoom all hours of the day and night, and it's evident to them that we are not showing ourselves love. And so it's really hard for them to come to us and say, "Hey, I need you to recognize that I might be tired, burnt out, distressed because if I don't see you taking care of you, how do I expect you to take care of me?" I'm wondering, does that resonate with you at all?
It totally resonates with me. I mean, I'm a geriatric millennial, if you will. I'm at the further end of being a millennial. And I look at some people in generations ahead of me, and I don't want to overgeneralize because there are some Gen Xers that totally take care of themselves. They will self-care before a Gen Zer or millennial will. And I love that. The deal is, though, is to spread that out and remember you are dealing with whole. Yes, you can quantify the people, but how dare you not qualify the people at the same time? People are people. We're multifaceted. We have so many things that go on in our brains, in our hearts, in our bodies. And one of the things that I've become really, really good at, but I practice this, is suspending judgment. I'd rather be curious than judgmental, because anytime I've been curious, I've been able to learn more than what I already knew before going into the situation. Whenever I've approached the situation, particularly initially with the eye of judgment, I miss all of the other things that I could pick up on. I can become people smart, I can become human smart if I approach other humans with curiosity versus judgment. Go figure. Goes back to reconciling as an accountant. Being human is not so dissimilar from the structured nature of accounting, although I've sometimes thought them to be very different. In the most practical way of being, we are literally reconciling at the end of the day. And oftentimes, just dealing with people, we're reconciling emotions against thoughts. That's still the package of humanity. Those things work together. The heart and the brain, I think, really do want to both work together in our best interest. I do not think that they are competitors. I think they are on the same team, wanting to hold hands to our next best solution, our next best way of being. And that's the way that I approach other humans. But I've also, again, started that approach with myself. My heart and my brain want to work together for my best outcome. And I think the same for other people. Now, could I be wrong? Yes, but I'm at least going to approach things in that way.
But I think it's interesting that you said that because that brings me back to that fuzzy, glossy eye that I get when we talk about empathy. But I also think that it's the way that you said it about your heart and your brain, meaning there is us understanding what needs to happen for people.
But there's also the reality of we are here to run a business and we have to make logical decisions and we have to find synergy in those types of things. So I'm wondering, can you give us an example of what that looks like? So when we talk about humanity and we talk about our hearts and our brains working together, walk me through an example from your own career, from your own experience as a leader. What does that look like in real life? How do I paint a picture of how that comes together?
Let's just take an example of working Monday through Friday. And Saturday and Sunday, we all disappear from each other in the workplace, virtual workplace, physical workplace, whatever have you. What I don't know is someone's Sunday night or Monday morning. Do you know how many people we work with and interact with come out of a home situation that is less than favorable for them? And many of them try to show up to the workplace on Monday with a smile on their face, with a joke on their heart, even in the midst of hurting and being in pain. This goes back to me saying, I really try to steer clear of judgment and really try to get into the mode of curiosity. Because when people leave us as their people leaders, we don't know what they deal with. And because we don't know what they deal with, I am eyes wide open, heart wide open, mind wide open of how to interact with them. Now, I'm not a pushover. I'm not a getover. I'm not assertive. I'm not passive. None of those things. But what I am is compassionate and empathetic and understanding and caring. And how does that manifest in the workplace? I have a colleague who's taking care of a sick parent. Perhaps they can't do an 8 to 5, 4 weeks out of a month. Perhaps they need a modified schedule. I do believe that when we help people take care of their personal lives as best as possible and as logical as possible while they're an employee, we will get very positive results from them in their professional life. But as a person who's led teams in the corporate space and in the academic space, I try to show up in the manner in which I do not know what happened to you before you arrive to work today. I don't know what you're going to face when you leave work today. At least you can come into a people leader who has a heart and a mind that is pointed in your best interest, whatever that looks like. And your best interest may look different on different days. Some days your best interest may look like me and you both holding our feet to the fire and getting through this project. Some days you probably don't need to be here. And as your people leader, I might need to recognize that you've had a rough 2 weeks. Take a day off, go sit in the sun, go recharge, and please, you'll come back as a better employee. I think the context of the pandemic helped a number of us see that. And I think the people who wanted to grow through that and learn themselves in a different way, become perhaps better managers, maybe more sensitive to people's home lives because we were in Zoom land or virtual land, you got a glimpse into some of what people's personal ways were in accordance with their professional ways. My hope is that that generated increased humanity and that because we are seemingly on the other side of a pandemic, that we've just become better versions of leaders, more sensitive versions of people leaders. Again, not more passive people leaders, but more assertive and more understanding.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. And I think I'm reminded of when we were in the pandemic and all at home, and we got to know each other very, very well, because suddenly we saw each other's kids. Mm-hmm. We saw each other's spouses. Sometimes we saw each other's homes. I'd be in my kitchen, like, don't mind those dishes. Mm-hmm. And it was probably one of the first times that we, even though we said it before, we really did see people as human beings in their home lives. There was not this divide between work and personal lives. And I remember, to your point about, like, how do you make the decisions? There was someone on my team who was struggling. And, you know, I think it's easy to say, well, but the deadlines are the deadlines are the deadlines. But taking that step back and saying, there are a multitude of things happening for you as a human being right now that make it almost impossible for you to do the best work that you can do. Mm-hmm. So first and foremost, we're going to spend this conversation about the work. And I'm actually going to cover you. If someone needs something from you, they can talk to me and I'll take care of it, or I'll redelegate it, because you need some time. Mm-hmm. And being able to give this person time to work through those issues, I'll never forget, they were like, I have never had a people leader who I felt comfortable telling these challenges to. Mm-hmm. And us working to a viable solution. And, you know, we got her to a place of being a top performer, mm-hmm. but we had to go through what's happening with you as a human being. And let's deal with that before we deal with the work, because those things are not separate. And I think even for us as managers, we try to pretend like it's separate for us, and it's not.
So we get to the point where we stop pretending. And I arrived at that point where I stopped pretending with myself. And I think that helped me not pretend about anyone else. To one of the points you made, something that is so gratifying yet heartbreaking at the same time, it runs this dual track, is when a direct report tells you or tells me, I've never had somebody care this much, or I've never had somebody who I felt like I could talk to. And some of these people have been working 20 and 30 years, and they've gone through 10 and 20 managers. And to hear them say, I've never, again, I'm gratified, but I'm also heartbroken at the same time. That just lets me know, though, that we have more development to do with the people that we put in people leader positions. There's still time to work with some of these people who have also been disaffected by less than favorable people leaders. But again, just that dual track, that hearing those words of validation and affirmation and certainly of celebration to us for being great people leaders also just puts me in an interesting place, thinking how sad that this person who now reports to me has endured less than favorable people leadership, sometimes 10, 20, 30 years of their career. Gosh.
So so many questions are popping in my head. So do you think that that is an evolution of work, though? Because, you know, when I think about, and again, not to generalize, but when I think about older generations in the workplace, they very much had this staunch divide between work, personal, and kind of how you dealt with people. And now you have like Gen Zs who have this expectation. They fully expect for you to care about them as a human being. It's almost foreign to them that you would not. So I guess my question is, do you think that it is just the evolution of work? And even though you are a geriatric millennial, you're at the start of people who are like, I'm a whole person. And so it is sort of more natural, but that's literally context of work. So what do you think about that?
So I have done the reading and research in this space. And actually my initial dissertation topic for my doctoral degree was steeped in a generational study and understanding those multiple generations that were in the workplace interacting together at the same time. Before I answer that specific question, I'll tell you, the oldest or eldest person in my department when I was in my corporate space was the person responsible for e-learning. It wasn't me. It wasn't the person who was next oldest from me or the person who was next oldest from them. And so the interesting context was the digital native, me, wasn't the person responsible for e-learning. And the eldest person in my department was actually the person designing and developing the e-learning. I just thought that was an interesting way to flip the generalized context on its head about the generations functioning together in the workplace. I'll say this, I think and have experienced that all generations have contained people who first leaned to humanity. I also think and have observed where every generation I've interacted with had people who first leaned to a robotic way of being. Do I think or have I observed a higher prevalence in the newer generations about embracing humanity and infusing that into the workplace? I'll say yes. But people in older generations, some of them were pushing for what we now realize as a more human way of being while working.
I love it. I love it. There's a spectrum in every generation, and maybe humanity was taken care of in different ways. Because going back to your earlier point about it drives the decisions that we make, maybe it showed up differently than it shows up now, and that we just kind of see it differently. But all in all, that there are people in every generation that feel this way or wanted it, but maybe didn't even have the language to express that need.
Sure. And I mean, you are an industrial organizational psychologist. You and I have both seen the change in the industrial and organizational spaces. Let's not kid ourselves. There are different people leading and managing in these spaces than there were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30, 40, 50, 70, years ago, the nature of who is in charge by look and feel have changed. We're on the move. We don't have it 100% correct, but there has been a lot of movement, and thus we see different leadership styles, different ways of prioritization on people's time, people's energy, people's efforts, and what we allow or disallow in the workplace. A lot of that, I would suggest, has been influenced by the changing nature of who is the people leader and who is the people manager.
I find this interesting because you and I both share an L&D background, but that's not, you didn't say develop people leader. You said we have to make some differences in how we choose and select people leaders. But I'm going to kind of combine those two things. How do we get more people who understand what it means to lead from a place of humanity, who practice it? And how do we even, I'm going to take you broader because I know you can go there. How do we create work cultures that enable us to do it?
Okay. Wow, wow, and wow. So not tongue in cheek. We need more people like you who are interested in investigating these things from a scientific way of being. We could use more tools, unbiased tools, to assess people's level of humanity. Just like I mentioned, the social science researchers have developed and refined love assessments, love scales, really pointed to the industrial and organizational space. I would probably think, if not developed, that there's in development other forms of humanity scales, that if organizational leaders really wanted to assess for those kinds of people that carry those kinds of characteristics, that they would either partner with someone like you, like me, develop their own tools and techniques, or go out and purchase those tools that would help them assess to what you mentioned about having those kinds of people at the helm of organizations. And in a connected manner, how I mentioned over the past 100 years, we do see a difference of who is leading and in charge of some organizations, some teams, some departments, that the landscape has changed in many industries and in many organizations about who's leading those. I do believe recognizable experience-wise that there is a move in many spaces to find leaders who are going to infuse humanity in the workplace. There is strong social science research that supports the notion of if we take care of people personally and professionally, we will get increased productivity from them. Now, if I'm the CEO of an organization, a department manager, a department leader, of which I am, I want those people reporting to me. I want those people working beside me. I want to report to those kinds of people. There is this concept of the dual bottom line where you look at the quantitative key performance indicators or KPIs in organizations, but you also look at the people indicators and how well we are doing with the people. And in a very authentic, transparent, methodical, systematic, and scientific manner, looking at those people factors along with the business factors and getting those both right. That dual bottom line, when struck both right, I bet you'll have a dynamic, well-performing, outstanding organization that is full of humanity.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay. Last question for you. So say I'm a people leader, right? So I've been selected. I'm here now. Maybe it's not where I was conditioned. It's not natural. I'm just learning about this. Let me lead it from a place of humanity. How do I increase it for myself? How do I infuse it into my team and ensure that not only am I doing it in my personal relationships, my personal interactions, but my team is treating each other that way? Mm-hmm. Give me one or two or three really good things that I can do that will start me on my journey.
Yeah, thanks for the question. Build your awareness of the concept and self-assess where you are with the tenets of humanity. where you are with compassion, empathy, joy, comfort, trust, respect, and love. But where you are with those internally first, and then how you deploy those second. But please start with the internal job. Please, please, please. This work of humanity is first internal before it is external. Handle that awareness piece. We all have areas of growth. Partner with people. Gain resources. Put on your professional and personal development plan that you are going to immerse yourself or expose yourself to other people and material resources that can help grow your humanity. And have people assess you, people who care about you, who love themselves, and who can consequently assess you properly and assess you through objective means of how you are doing in the humanity spaces. I guess to wrap it all up and put a bow on top of it, intentionality has to be at the root of growing, learning, assessing, deploying your own humanity for what I believe is the next best workplace. But that workplace is situated in what I'd like to see as the next best world.
Oh, I love that. What a wonderful way to end this conversation. I am so honored to call you friend. You are brilliant. You are a wonderful people leader. I'm so glad I was able to have you on the show today. If anybody would like to work on their own humanity and perhaps reach out to you and just learn a little bit more about your journey and your process and how you bring it to life, is it okay for them to reach out to you on LinkedIn?
Please, I would love to be contacted on LinkedIn, and I'm willing to partner with others, consult, share, do whatever I can to increase the state of humanity among humans.
Oh, I love it. Well, listen, on behalf of obviously me and the listeners, thank you for sharing everything. And for my listeners, you know, I'm going to challenge you to do exactly what Dr. James said and to assess yourself on those tenets and think about how you are treating yourself first and then how some of those tenets show up with your teams. So on behalf of my guest and myself, thank you for listening to Manager to Manager, and we'll see you next time.